Sultan Meghji is the former chief innovation officer at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. That's your FDIC, a Duke professor and scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Sultan, welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you today?
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. How are you?
I'm good. Is it great? Let's ask you to score a couple of things, and let's start with the Fed policy. How do you think they are doing, and what should they be doing?
Well, I wish I could give them higher marks. They're starting to act in a higher way. I think a few weeks ago, I would have given them a kind of a 3 or a 4 out of 10. Now it's, maybe a 5 or a 6 out of 10, with this most recent higher rate hike. It was a step in the right direction, but it was kind of, once they missed a couple of swings at bat. So I'll use a baseball metaphor there. We're in a situation where they probably should have acted sooner. They probably should have acted more aggressively. And now I think there's a little bit of a crisis of confidence with the Federal Reserve. And so a lot of people are kind of sitting back waiting to see if they continue to act in a more data-driven and more direct way to try to stop this kind of boulder of recession, rolling down the hill at us.
One of our guests said that an adult is in the room after they raised it 0.75 point. And then the chairman came back with a statement saying, we are not going to let this thing slide. We are going to be aggressive and on it. And the market seemed to respond appropriately, positively at that time. Is that what you're talking about, that maybe they needed to be more attentive, but that perhaps they're paying better attention to the fundamentals of the market right now?
It certainly looks that way. And I know that, Chair Powell and the rest of the board were really trying to kind of be gentler and be softer for a while. But the fact is they weren't looking at the data in a complete way. And so now they're having to be more aggressive and playing a little bit of catch up.
Well, Sultan, do they have many other tools? I mean, so they can adjust interest rates. But there's two gears in this thing. When and how much? What else could the Fed do about monetary policy?
Well, the one thing that they did kind of drop on everyone, even though they'd hinted a bit, was this moving away from quantitative easing to quantitative tightening. So, over the last couple of years, the Fed has bought up a bunch of stuff. They've bought pieces of American businesses and a bunch of, bank debt and other things like that. And very quickly, I think far quicker than some anticipated, they went from buying to selling. And so, they've put a bit of pressure there. And one could have argued that they should have lagged that just a little bit and not done both of these at the same time. The final thing that at some point they're going to have to come back around on is getting us back to a, this kind of 2% range. So if you think about our economy at that level is really being two things. One is GDP growth on the left side, and on the right side is the interest rate that the Federal Reserve charges everyone else to borrow money. And our lending rate should be around 2%, and our GDP growth rate should probably, kind of averaging it out, be between 3.5% and 4%. And so you have those two numbers kind of pulling against each other a bit. And what the Fed did was really focus exclusively on GDP for far too long, and now they're focusing seemingly exclusively on inflation rates on the other side. And really, I and a lot of other people would be expecting them to be talking about both of them, because you can't have one without the other.
Talk about the word recession. Does that word matter? So say we don't hit the number exact. Talk about where we are. Are we going to be in a recession? Are we in a recession? And does that word matter to you?
It absolutely matters to me. And really the definition of it is really 3/4 of negative, contraction, negative growth. And certainly this quarter is not looking that great. It's definitely going to be in the 0.1, 0.2, maybe 0.3. So it's entirely possible this could be the first quarter of those 3/4 of recession. I think, we'll really need to see if the summer holidays really spur, retail purchasing and consumer spending. Yeah. But we also have to be careful saying the R word, as my friends in D.C. say, too often, because we don't want to introduce a crisis of confidence just by talking about it.
I do think it can be a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Not that that alone would do it, but I think overselling it might not necessarily be in anybody's better interest. What do you think we could look for to indicate that it's not going to be that bad, that we aren't going to fall into a recession? Is it consumer spending? What metrics would you look at?
I would look at anything that a consumer spends money on right now, and that's everything from cars to, you know, going out to eat and everything in between. You know, for so many people who've come out of COVID, they want to try to do everything. They want to, you know, get out of their house. They want to go to concerts. They want to travel. They want to do this. I would look to see if that's maintaining and what we would, you know, kind of see that same level of activity. That's a big one. You know, I would also look to see gas prices. You know, if gas prices start to come back a little bit from, you know, some of their very, very high, you know, watermarks right now, that'll be a nice indicator as well. And then, you know, the final thing is, it's not just the next, you know, 6 to 8 weeks we're looking at. I think, to me and a lot of others, I think we look at October and November leading into Thanksgiving and Christmas is probably one of the more important windows. If it can be sustained through then, I think we're in a good spot to
spending,
to avoid
consumer
it.
Spending can be sustained. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yes, exactly right.
Talk to me about the supply chain. Where are we on that?
We're in a rough spot. So two different things are pressuring the supply chain right now. The first is, in China, they've gone through these lockdowns. They've struggled to kind of get through COVID in the same way we have. And so their supply chain is just not producing as much as it should be. You know, it's not uncommon to have a decent number of boats off the coast of China waiting to pick stuff up. Now it's, you know, record highs. And so that backlog needs to get handled. The second thing that's pressuring the supply chain is as the Chinese economy evolves, it's moving away from being an export-driven economy to a little more focus on domestic consumption. And so it's not clear that they have the capacity to do both at the levels that they need to. And so if that's the case, then they will not be exporting as much, and the rest of the global supply chain will just have to get used to it. We'll have to see how quickly they get out of this most recent COVID lockdown set to really understand what that looks like. But the way that I would look at it is, look at the lag times on cars, new cars, and look at the lag times on computers and phones and tablets and things like that. As we go through the remainder of this year, those lead times should drop down, you know, pretty quickly. And if they don't, then I think we'll see that the global supply chain, especially on semiconductors, will have to just build new capacity outside of China in order to support the global demand.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are listening to you going, well, let's just start doing that stuff here. I got 20 seconds. Are you optimistic? How long will it take us to ramp up some of the production that we realized we didn't have a capacity for when the pandemic hit?
It's going to take a while. I wish there was a 6-month solve to this, but, you know, to build a chip fab, you're talking, you know, a couple of billion dollars, a lot of direct expertise, of which we don't necessarily have all of them in the workforce, and, you know, 3 or 4 years. So some of the supply chains can get turned very quickly. You know, anything related to food or agriculture, you know, baby formula, those are things that can be solved in months or a year. When you're talking about chips, you're talking about cars, you're talking about, you know, more advanced pharmaceuticals, that's years.
Darn. That's Sultan Meghji. He is the former Chief Innovation Officer, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, Duke Professor and Scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Sultan, nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. And you're also listening to more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Abbott Laboratories is planning a new office space in Willis Tower that could bring 450 jobs to downtown Chicago. Cranes reports the company has leased about 100,000 square feet on the 25th and 26th floors of Willis. Abbott plans to move in during the third quarter of 2023. An internal memo to employees says the purpose of the new location is to provide a new option for some of our current and future colleagues who live in the city and want to work closer to home. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And more business of food with Steve Alexander.
Boy, our food calendar is just full of all kinds of dairy-related items because June is Dairy Month, and today it is National Smoothie Day. It's also National Peaches and Cream Day. We are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. And we were happy to find out yesterday that our Ukrainian farmer friend Nick Gordachuk, who farms near Kyiv, is doing okay. He's safe. His family has still not returned from France, where he visited recently.
When I was traveling to see my family, there were lines of trucks going through Romanian border, through Polish border. It was grain going to ports of Constancia through Poland. So we have a lot of problems with export of grains because of the blockade that we have in the Black Sea. Just give you an idea, last month we exported about 1 million tons in total. But the grain we have in the store now in Ukraine, farmers have in their stores, about 20 million tons. Sunflower, maize, corn, or winter wheat. And 20 million tons, it would take 20 months to export if we export it like this. But in a month, we are having new crop coming. And where will we put another 70 million tons, which we are going to harvest? So that's going to be a catastrophe. And I already saw that in some, I was traveling through Poland, Germany, Netherlands. I already saw a deficit of sunflower oil in the shops of sunflowers, but also flour. And this war will touch not only Ukraine, but also is already influencing the lives of many in Europe. And I heard also the gasoline in America went up in price.
Oh, yeah. We talk about it all the time. It's about $5 a gallon here. How much is it there?
At the moment, we bought at 70 hryvnia by, let's say, 32. We are paying roughly $3 per liter.
Wow, that's over $11 a gallon.
And but it's not, you know, it's one thing when you have to pay more, another thing when it's not available. And that's the biggest problem.
Nick Gordichuk will be back tomorrow to talk more about farming in Ukraine during war. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth is looking at a bunch of things for us, including apartment rents in Chicago. Hi, Amy.
Hi, John. How's it going today?
Good. So what's the number?
Well, right now, it is really a landlord's market. Albie Galoon from Crane's Chicago Business reported that rents are up about 19% right now downtown when we're looking at those kind of higher-end Class A apartment buildings. That translates into about $3.55 per square foot up the first quarter. And even Class B apartments still up higher, still a record at $2.92 per square foot. So what, you know, industry watchers that Albie Galoon spoke to, What they're kind of predicting is this might drive people out of the downtown area to more, you know, other neighborhoods just kind of outside of downtown. And things he noted in the reporting that I thought were interesting, the hiring sprees that some companies are going on and the strong job market, that's not, even though more people are still working maybe remote or hybrid schedules, we're still not seeing that demand for apartments go down. What might be interesting, given that supply is low because of how many apartments were not built earlier in the pandemic, and with demand really high, what we may see happen too with rising interest rates, people that might be buyers, might be, you know, condo buyers, might be pushed out of that and continue renting a little longer. So it'll be interesting to see what continues to happen with downtown rents. Are people going to move to outer parts of the city? Are they going to, you know, is that going to mean more retention for landlords? People are maybe less likely to jump to another building or upgrade or something like that. So I think right now the apartment story downtown is a very interesting one.
Are you surprised by the occupancy rate?
I kind of am. It's up there pretty high. It's up in the, you know, upper 90s. It dropped for a little while. Now, if you square this with kind of the condo market rate, it's really interesting. And Dennis Rodkin at Cranes has done a lot of reporting on just the downtown condo market. But Fulton Market kind of continues to be its own beast and separate from all the rest of downtown in terms of how it's behaving. So it's really interesting to watch that. But I think the interest rates will be a big piece of that to see what it looks like in the next quarter ahead.
Airline profitability is in the news, or at least the potential for it. What's the story there?
That's right. So the International Air Transport Association trade group, they had their annual meeting on Monday, and the chief of that, the director general, Willie Wall, he made some really interesting comments. He was very optimistic. He was talking about, hey, we're coming back. He specifically said, we are rebounding and industry-wide profits should be on the horizon in 2023 and much stronger than predicted. One thing I thought he said that was very, very interesting was, given how high fuel prices are right now for airlines, and that's driving some ticket prices up, he said that those higher jet fuel prices could be what kind of the catalyst that's needed to move airlines into sustainable aviation fuel, because the price differential right now is so much narrower than it was prior to seeing all those fuel prices rise. So he also said, you know, he sees that the war in Ukraine will remain a long-term challenge for a lot of airlines. And this is an international trade group. So in particular, Finnish airlines, they've really lost a great deal of business because they have to kind of fly the opposite direction protection to avoid Russian or Ukrainian airspace right now. But indeed, he was, you know, talking about U.S. rebounds and all that. And he cited staffing as that's going to continue to be an issue. Part of that is that workers who might want a remote situation, much harder to do that if you work in the aviation industry. Yeah. But also it takes a long time to train people to, you know, you can't just hire somebody and then put them in the air. They have to train very, very carefully to do those jobs. So still some headwinds this year, but really he expressed a lot of optimism for the year ahead.
I hope they get enough people to work for these airlines. I think that's a real stumbling block right now. One last story. Kellogg is splitting into three companies. They haven't said what they're going to name them. I suppose Kellogg would be one, but they're going to be three different units now, aren't they?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So Kellogg is based in Battle Creek, Michigan, and they're going to split into three separate companies. The headquarters of the biggest one is going to be here in Chicago. So that's an interesting win for us right now, just as we just lost Boeing and Caterpillar. They just announced they were going to be leaving. So the cereal business will be its own thing. Plant-based foods will be its own thing. And then the snack business, that's about 80% of the company's revenue. That's what's going to be here. That's going to be in a space that they already have a lease on at 420. 12 North Wells Street. That was originally the headquarters for RX Bar, which they bought in 2017. They had moved to the merchandise, but now they're merchandise mart, but then moving into that Wells Street space kind of over the past year. So I think this is going to be a really fascinating thing. They did say they're going to wait and announce the names a little bit later. So we've got to wait for that. But you know, that's a huge move for such an old company. I mean, that's a very, very old company to be splitting off in this way. They're still going to keep a presence, even the snack business. They're going to still keep a campus in Battle Creek, Michigan, but that headquarters part will be in Chicago. And that being the biggest of the three business units.
Yeah, I score that as a win too. And that's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.